Welcome back, listeners, to the Brighter Side of Blue Worldwide Podcast. I'm Danny.
I'm Tommy.
I'm JJ.
And you notice, people, if you notice one little thing, that's producer John.
There he is. On camera.
Producer John, why don't you have your garb on? Why don't
he's got the hat. That's the hat. A good hat.
No, I can't wear both because then you look
I agree. 100%. One or the other.
No,
it looks like a uniform.
Then. I'm referring to the Lee Jean shorts, six pocket shorts.
Oh, it's New Balance. It's waist up picture.
You should be modeling your own stuff.
There will be a runway modeling of it in the near future.
One of our on location
things, we're going to have a little producer John runway.
Yes, definitely.
I love it.
That we should name the top seven male models that we recommend for this runway. John being one, Steve Hobbs number two, and that's my pick. Bunko would look good in those.
Okay.
All great suggestions so far.
I'm on a roll with that. Yeah.
You just keep going. We'll just leave it to you.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not saying anybody.
I'm going to have a casting call.
Nobody will call. Trust me.
Jack will help me.
Jack.
Huggy's under the weather, though. Got to wish Huggy some get well soon.
Get well, Huggy.
Huggy's hugging the toilet right now.
Yes
he is.
And it's not from drinking, apparently.
He appreciates us telling everybody that, too. I think he got it from his... I'm not going to say anything. Don't want to give it away, but yeah. I think he got it from family members.
Okay.
Okay, how you feeling?
I'm perfect. He wasn't around me.
Okay. All right. That was almost a faux pas.
Well, with the Barney's... So when this airs, the Barney's have been last night. And everybody at the location will understand that they have all agreed... For an NDA for Huggy.
Is anybody still hungover from that night?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I got to think that I'm going to be pretty hungover the next day.
We got Ubers lined up.
Ubers lined up.
Ubers, exactly. Because that's how we roll.
That's right.
So NDA. You,
everybody there is under an NDA, and we're not scared to sue anybody. we'll sue the shit out of somebody.
Our legal budget is ginormous.
Hey, our producer has some contacts with some attorneys and judges, so we'll be all right.
Yeah, we'll get you. So keep your mouth closed.
Yep.
Because Huggy may be revealed.
I don't know how we can't. He's got to sit there and do Huggy stuff.
Yeah.
John misses it when Huggy ain't here. He had to show us videos and everything else on the two interviews we had. Pictures.
Get well soon, Huggy.
Jack, brother Jack, how are we doing with get on in the picture. Give us a social media update.
Yes, sir. We have officially hit 500,000 views across platforms, so that's a big accomplishment. Wow. I think that's pretty damn fast for most things, so... very cool to see that. I'm going to keep hitting you with this. Get us on the Brighter Side of Blue. It's on YouTube. We're on Instagram. We're on TikTok, Twitter, Facebook. So you know where to find us, baby. Come on.
Yeah.
That's good.
There you go.
500,000 views.
I wonder how that pimping went last night. You know,
it would.
Jack is single, and we're going to continue to try to find Jack some love in his life.
We're going to get him a drop phone. All the calls coming in.
Exactly. Huggy's at the helm.
500,000 views.
That's pretty cool.
Sponsors coming in. Grassroots podcast.
Yes, we're getting some interest with that, and so one of our sponsors now is Jeff Jensen and Hush Blackwell, and Jeff really enjoys our mission statement, and again, we don't want to read it like a. I still love that comment. You can't read it like it's a hostage fucking letter.
Jack.
But no, that just to memorialize all the great police work. And we had another guy on here today with Jason Grellner. We had another, the officer of the week. And what was his name, Danny? Sergeant Tony Moutre.
Sergeant Tony Moutre.
And just get as many people as we can on this podcast that we can just get on here for like a reason. And not a reason so much, but... everybody doesn't have to have these hour-long stories for us to get you on, to have fun. Right. And we really want to expand our platform to and I know this is getting a long mission statement today, but to get these guys on, all these stories memorialized and show you guys some of the characters that are involved in police work and to do it in a fun way and just in a positive way, and just kind of leave all the silliness out of it, all the bullshit.
Well, there's plenty of silliness and bullshit.
Right, that we can make funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And that's what we'll do.
Yeah, and that's what we're here to do. And that's absolutely what the show's doing. And 500,000 people have seen what we're up to. And thanks, Jeff Jensen, for sponsoring that.
I also want to thank JJ for staying awake during Tom's
mission
bloviation.
That was a bloviation. That was a bloviated mission statement.
It was right on the money, though.
I did zone out for a little bit.
You did?
Yeah. JJ, that is not unusual.
How's your driving going?
I've had no incidents.
No incidents.
I call bullshit. I know that dude's had an incident.
I'm not commenting. I can't keep talking about these incidents, but there are some stupid people out there driving.
Anything happen at the St. Patrick's Day parade yesterday?
No, it was nice. It was a good crowd. The weather was perfect, and then it got cool enough in the evening that it cleared out for the first time. And I can remember by 6 o'clock, Dogtown was pretty much done.
Beautiful. Great.
Yeah. My daughter. Sunday, like I think it's Sunday night, too, and then they have, you know,
back
to work the next day.
Back to back, because a lot of people went to that
right,
Saturday.
Right. That was actually perfect, probably. But there was a good crowd. I mean, it was packed. It was wall-to-wall people in the streets, so it was neat. Jack, would you go down there?
That's a no. Jack did not.
I do say one thing. It would have been a lot of fun if I could actually go and just participate instead of being there as a police officer.
I always felt like that. That's why
to the parade right now.
What's that?
If you were off that day, you would have went down there.
Probably not.
Okay, I just want to clear that.
But I think it would be fun.
Back in the day, yeah.
We went to the Blues when they won the Stanley Cup down there. Maggie's, that was awesome.
This is a St. Patrick's Day parade.
I know, but just that same kind of crowd.
It wasn't.
All right.
I know how you feel like that, though, because I used to work secondary for Colonel Layshock down at the ballpark.
Yep.
And I got fired 3 different times by Colonel Layshock. I couldn't stand to be there
in
uniform.
You fired or suspended? I guess you were
no,
suspended.
No, he fired him.
Yeah, you remember. You remember these days. I'd sit there in uniform, and these people are eating hot dogs and peanuts and having cold beer, just enjoying the game with their friends, and I'm sitting there, and it's just torture to watch.
Wait a minute.
I couldn't do it.
That's not why you got fired.
Well, no, but listen. numerous times... I would, you know, the schedule would come up, and Layshock would give me, hey, Danny, you're working these 6 days this month. These are the days that you agreed you're available, and these days you're going to be there. So as soon as the day came up, I'm like, I don't feel like going down there and doing that. But I'd always be conscientious and find a replacement. But I didn't know, JJ, that he didn't play that.
No.
It's not your job to find a replacement. It's your job to have your ass there when you said you could be there. So the second time I did it, a replacement was there. I thought that's all I was required to do. He said, "Hey, Danny, I'm taking a schedule. You're out. You're out.
Fired.
And he's one of your best friends.
Best friend. And I'm telling you. But he goes, but we are still best friends. We're playing poker. This. We're going to play tennis here. We're going to do this. But you're not working for me anymore down at the ballpark. A couple months later, there's a big series coming in, or Yankees are coming in, or there's a wild card game or something. And I said, hey, Jerry, can I come back? Come back. He goes, yeah, you can come back. I'd work like one game, and I'd do the same thing. I'd get a good placement. He fired me. Then Major Sean Dace, the third time, said, hey, the next season, you need to give Danny another shot. I did the same thing, and he fired me. And that was the end of it. That's what you remember, JJ?
Yes, exactly.
He finally got pulled off the field for good?
Yeah. He said, that's it.
Field,
and
out.
He said, that's it. But I thought about that story because you said you'd like to sit there and actually partake in the festivities at Dogtown.
I remember thinking, man, he hired him back. And then it was like,
he must really like him.
And a couple weeks later, I was like, where's Danny? Has he worked any games? He goes, no, I fired him.
I'm not a jealous person by nature, but if I'm watching my friends eat and drink and I'm working, I can't stand it.
I can't stand it.
I'd just rather be in the worst alley in the city than watching my friends eat and drink in front of me.
So I never worked secondary again.
Really?
At 34 years on the job, that was it. I didn't work secondary.
You got a salty taste in your mouth for that?
Well, yeah. You know, I didn't want to risk the fourth time.
But it was cool. I mean, I saw a lot of people I knew. That was fun. So I actually kind of walked in the crowd and saw, you know, Brian McKenna and his brother. It was all, they were a lot of fun. And Pat Welch showed up.
Good. Yep. Did you go by Horgan's house?
No. Heard about it.
Good spot.
JJ, you got a buddy that is our first sponsor.
Yes, but I'm not going to say that. I'm going to do the.
Hold on now. Where's the music?
Wait a minute.
JD's on to something here.
No, go ahead. You can if you want.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the sponsor after.
Okay.
I'm going to take the guessing game out of this.
Oh, I like to guess.
No, no. You understand.
All right.
Why this one? This is actually a Zen quote. This is actually, I didn't make this up. This is a Zen quote.
You made the other ones up?
No. But I just want to verify, because you're going to think maybe that.
Weren't they all quotes?
Yeah.
Isn't JJ Zen a litany of quotes?
Yes. But I just want to people think that I didn't make this one up. You'll see why when I say
it. Okay. I'm waiting. JJ Zen.
Only when you can be extremely pliable and soft can you be hard and strong.
What just happened?
Is that a toilet paper commercial?
No. Only when you can be extremely pliable and soft can you be extremely hard and strong. And that's...
What the hell does that mean?
What is that?
Cock and balls?
What is that?
Sir Cock and Balls?
I read that. I read that this morning.
Got that from his friend, the porn fluffer.
I kept laughing.
John Holmes.
Oh, man.
I don't even know what that is. No, I don't, I'm not thinking of that.
So that's sponsored by Eddie Messplay from American Republic Insurance.
He's going to pull his money back.
We're going to have to give him a refund. Hey,
we owe him money for this.
Sorry, Ed.
Hey, he is. What the hell? He's an expert in Medicare and health insurance. He's 25 years doing it, and he's going to appreciate this one, I'm sure.
Where can they get a hold of him at?
You can get a hold of him at 636-240-8530. 636-240-8530. Ed, thanks for this one. I really appreciate you. I think he sent it in to me and said, use this one.
No.
Can we read it again?
Whose quote was that?
Let's read it again. No. One more time.
This was really Zen. Now I can show you on my phone. It's a real Zen quote. Only when you can be extremely pliable and soft, you can be extremely hard and strong.
Sir Cock and Balls.
Like bull.
Okay, whose quote is that?
It's a Zen quote. It's a Zen quote.
I know, but is it attributed to somebody?
All it says is Zen.
Okay.
That's who you attribute it to?
Zen quote.
I find it not relaxing. I find it not peaceful.
Well, I think it's kind of appropriate.
I find it confusing. I find it perverted.
Well, and actually,
we talk about the meth.
What about the meth? It kind of sets up his meth moment.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah.
He has a meth moment coming up.
Oh, yeah, with Jason Groner, our guest tonight.
One of our guests, a frontline warrior on war on meth.
So you guys don't find that Zen-ish?
No, not at all. Producer John?
Jack?
I
like it. Thanks, man.
I thought of toilet paper being pliable and
soft.
Strong and strong at the same time.
Yeah.
Maybe... Producer John, toilet paper coming this summer.
Maybe Charmin is very
Zen-ish.
Right.
Hey, you know what? Every Zen can't be a grand slam. It's
last
our
week
most
was a good one.
Yeah, it was very.
Oh,
good.
Last week he hit that one hard.
I think you're hitting about 900, but
he
I kind of think tonight sucked.
I thought that was great. I thought that was funny. It made me laugh.
we found that.
Let's go home and do some Zen kind of meditation on that.
And see if we can reconsider it.
It might make sense in a few weeks.
Yeah, because it's not. I don't even know what it's referring to.
You guys think you try to make it sexual. It's not.
Okay. Okay, then take it away from us. What is it supposed to be?
I don't know.
Ed's not going to talk to you anymore, yeah. I guarantee.
Thanks, Ed, for the sponsor, buddy.
We'll put producer John and newsroom.com on it. Do you have something from newsroom.com for us tonight?
See,
I do.
Does it have anything to do with Kate Middleton?
Or the royal family.
Or the royal family.
It doesn't appear to, but I can kind of work them in.
No.
This is from 2016, a newer one. It just kind of caught my eye. There's a man named James Walsh who, this is in Port St. Lucie, Florida, in 2016. He went in a Walmart and tried to steal a 58-inch TV because it was Christmas time. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess he wanted it for his family or whatever. So he went out one door, and the security guy caught him, so he ran back in, he ran out another door. Well, they start chasing him around. Well, James had the bad fortune of picking the day that the Port St. Lucie Police Department was doing shop with a cop day. So there was like 20 policemen in there with little disadvantaged kids shopping, and they all chased him around the store and ended up catching him and tackled him. And it was
James couldn't have seen 20 coppers shopping and right.
threw off duty.
No, I think they are in uniform.
Are they? I think you're right.
Yeah. Otherwise, yeah. It wouldn't have the same effect.
He didn't do his homework.
No, he did not do his homework.
No, he got hit with about five or six charges. And
it's probably five or six other things, too.
James Walsh did that, right?
So James. Walsh, hopefully he's still in jail just because he's so stupid.
Well, he thought it said shoplift with a cop.
Well, he was good on that one, but they didn't help him out. They just unceremoniously.
But how do you carry a big screen TV out and not get caught? It's hard to run with that, I would think.
Plasma. Aren't they light?
Still, they're awkward. They're
big. LCD.
LCD.
Or LED.
Yeah. Hey, James, if you're listening, call in and let us know.
Or just email us what you were thinking. Shoplift with a cop. Newsroom.com.
Newsroom.com. I couldn't find anything close to the exploding duck one to come back.
No, that's my favorite one ever. The Kia Cuck.
That one's going to be tough to top.
2 weeks in a row, we've had some people that have testified before Congress on our show.
Mm-hmm.
And tonight, Lieutenant Jason Grellner is going to blow your minds with what he knows about methamphetamines and what he has done. He holds a record for disassembling 1,261 meth labs.
Pretty crazy how meth. Remember how big that was back in the day?
Unbelievable.
And you would just, and then you still to this day, as a, one of those kind insults, to your friends. Hey, you meth head.
Yeah.
Right. Because of that craze that was going on, that these people were just, they were coming up with, you remember the old faces of meth? After like 4 years,
I had one in my phone. I tried to find, I couldn't find it.
Well, you could see, you lock people up and you look at their previous booking photos over the years when they first started meth.
It didn't take that long.
It didn't take, and their faces deteriorated and their teeth fell out and it came sunken in, and it's a horrible thing.
But Jason, he was right on the front lines. He was in there, Franklin County, when it started, and then, the meth labs just took over, and he was just very interesting. JJ was very interesting during that. He was.
The chemistry part started to put me to sleep a little bit.
Yeah, that parts per million.
Parts per million.
Right.
That parts per million kind of got you fading.
The Kool-Aid analogy, JJ was just.
He's right on the money. Right on the money.
I've been to the training.
So the listeners, you'll figure that out when you listen to Lieutenant Grellner.
And actually,
talk.
If you can tie in his. Zen. His little Kool-Aid.
His
maybe.
Zen seizure.
You never know.
I don't know about that. You guys made it perverted.
No, we didn't. We were confused. We were totally confused.
We made it perverted.
only when you can be extremely pliable and soft that you can be hard and strong.
He cut out some. That was just my notes. I didn't write it all down.
He left out a couple verbs in there. And
I did.
I don't know.
Yeah, he did. That's okay. You got the extent.
I got the gist.
You got to be extremely hard and soft. Or hard.
No, but the other person we had on was the officer of the week, Tony
Moutre. Sergeant Tony Moutre.
Actually, he did a really good job.
Absolutely. North County op.
Had a good sense of humor about it, too.
The troops sent him our way, and then what was revealed is, you'll find that out. Who he's related to? He's related to a previous guest that we've had on.
Yeah,
one of our very first guests, and we will not spill that. You got to listen to the next segment, right?
Yes, he will talk about. He has a great sense of humor. He will talk about a viral video, and we're going to show you all of his patrol car on duty being stolen by a person, and the video of that went viral over 1.7 million views. Yeah. And he's in our studio.
His kids were
laughing
about it. Kids were telling him about it.
So that comes first. That's our fourth officer of the show. And
What else I'd like to mention is that our next, so when this airs, we will be one on location behind us.
Yep.
Our next one will be at the old 3rd District Station at 12th and Lynch, right by the Anheuser-Busch.
Yeah.
We don't have a date yet. We're getting everything together, but we're definitely having it there. It'll be at the end of April.
Do we have a theme
or a sponsor?
It's going to be the third district, obviously. Okay. That'll and try to get some guys on there from the old third, Rich Banahan and Bob Zambo and some others. But parking is available right over there at AB, right across the street. So there'll be plenty of parking. And if it's nice out, what's really neat about the third district is it's still in its exact same structure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've done some different decorating and a few different things, but they still have the cells in there, the old garage, the sergeant's room, the desk area is all what it used to be. Different decor around there. And I think that'll be really fun for a lot of older police, or for a lot of policemen, and a lot of people that didn't know aren't policemen. It's just a nostalgic building.
Oh, yeah.
That is very cool.
Historic.
So historic. That's going to be our next show. We're going to be announcing
the
date of that on our next show.
Okay.
We'll be announcing it at Barney's when that date's going to be and what we're going to do on that show.
Cool.
Beautiful. That's awesome. So before we go on to the Officer of the Show segment, it's sponsored by retired city copper Nick Harbo, who is now a night watch policeman in Baldwin, and he listens to he's up to date on all the episodes. Is this episode 18?
That's up there.
19.
Episode 19. He's up to date.
It's 20. Jack's saying 20.
It's 20. Holy cow. But anyway, talk about grassroots. We have a night watch patrolman that insisted on being a sponsor and giving his hard-earned money to sponsor the show so that we can employ Jack Milliken. So, but anyway, we're grassroots.
Thank you, Nick. That's awesome.
Nick, thank you. And, cool. And Nick, please text me. Return my text. I want to talk about your realty, your business. Yeah. So get a hold of
Throw that out there.
Yeah, we'll give you a little love on that too. So anyway, enjoy the...
One last thing.
Oh, geez. There's always one last thing.
You mentioned Nick being on the Night Watch. We have a ton of Night Watch listeners.
Yeah.
And I just want to give a shout out to the Night Watch our listeners, to our policemen, and let everybody else know that it's not... These guys are out there in the wee hours of the morning, and they're trying to find something to do, and I'm glad... Sometimes they are. I'm glad we can keep them entertained, and hopefully
they have a little chuckle on their face while they're out there protecting us while we sleep.
Thank you for our night watch, peeps.
Yeah, true that.
All right, enjoy our interviews.
Peace.
All right, Tommy, let's move on to our Officer of the Show number 3.
Officer of the Show number 3, absolutely.
Number 3.
Yep.
Out of the corner, number out four. Of the blue corner of, is it number 4, producer guy?
We had Jamie, and we had... Shane. Then we had Jeff Sr.
It is number 4.
It's number 4. Producer John.
On the ball.
Always on the ball.
Well, I'm here.
You said that with confidence.
I did. I bloviated it with confidence. Here we go.
I was like, sure.
out of the blue corner, the North County Co-op, Officer Tony Moutra.
Sergeant.
Moutre. Sergeant. That's the second time I've done that.
Lieutenant after this show.
Yeah, you won't leave here a sergeant.
I can't wait.
Congratulations on Officer of the Show.
Thanks. It's a huge honor.
Major Assistant Chief Ron Martin from North County Co-op recommended you. Trooper, otherwise known as Trooper.
Troop.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Your boss used to work for Producer John.
You worked for him, huh?
Did you know that?
I do now.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Are we going to hear a story about Trooper later? You got any Trooper stories you want to tell?
The extra $7,000 a year you make as a sergeant, as opposed to being a patrolman, you earn in one day. I earned it like every day that I was with Trooper. But he's a very, very hard worker, very intelligent police officer. He's a good friend. But
The more you do, the more trouble you can get into.
Colonel Leshak told a good story about Trooper.
About the scoop.
Yeah, about the scoop. I'm here to get the scoop, Colonel.
Oh, was that the cigarette outside the hospital?
Yes, exactly. So you listened to it?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Troop with the scoop.
I think I might have said this story about Trooper already, though, but when he did a search warrant, when I was in SWAT and we did search warrants for him, he was always on point. His search warrants were organized right to the point, and he did a great job. He only ever had a bad search warrant. I'm sure he did, but not when we did them. And so he was always thankful, and always he always appreciated us. And We always, when he was going to do a search warrant, I was like, oh, cool, this will be a good one.
Yeah, I like working with him.
He's smart. He's a sharp detective.
A wealth of knowledge, for sure.
He is.
So, Tony, how many years have you done in law enforcement?
23 years.
23 years, and then how many at the co-op have you been with the co-op?
4 years.
And then before that?
I was with Peavey down in Jefferson County for 18
years. 23
years.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It's a long time.
Thank you. That's
no,
good. That's
no gray
good
hair yet, but I'm starting to show some sophistication in the facial hair.
Sophistication?
So, yes.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That's what I like to call it.
Right.
I can't get used to the beards.
Yeah, that kind
that's
of
just new,
you know,
to
with
us.
Officers. That I'm was just, not in our era.
No, I'm just doing it because we can.
Exactly.
I've always liked the stripe down the pants and the shiny everything and the baby face. But whenever it's just a thing, you got to do it just because you can. Now,
I get it.
You know, we used to get transferred. A lot of people, me included, when you got transferred to narcotics or a specialized unit, that's the first thing you did: either goatee or beard.
Grow your hair out.
The goatee was famous.
Yeah. And if you get transferred to homicide, it's mandatory you get one of those goofy hats.
Those newspaper
yeah,
boy
yeah,
hats?
Yeah.
Hey, I get it. How long have you been a sergeant?
About 3 years.
Okay. As a sergeant, does it nothing make you more mad when an officer wrecks a car?
You know, that's one of the most embarrassing things you can do in your career. And whenever they wreck a car, you just wonder where their head is placed on their body.
100%.
When they're driving. Yeah, we had a guy wreck a car one time, and I told him, I said, you need to get a glass stomach so you can see where you're going with your head up your ass.
Yeah.
You never heard that one before.
That's good.
Well, I think JJ was leading us into, and again, you know, guys, everybody that listens to our show, Tony, and you've listened to it, is we like to make fun of ourselves and laugh at ourselves because we do silly stuff out there, and silly stuff can happen.
Yeah, if only there was something that we could make fun of today, that would be great.
No, we got some. We're good. We're good. Yeah, we're good. We got you.
So, Tony, as part of the co-op, in this video we're about to see, went viral, correct, Tony? Would you say that it went viral?
That's what my kids call it, viral.
Yes, and viral. Your kids were questioning your activity on this
they were.
On this particular clip, but... And again, this is it's a funny clip here, but there ends up to be a good story. So first we'll watch the clip.
Watch this woman steal a police car.
Okay, this is probably my favorite police video. So police are questioning this woman here, whom we'll call Methica. So suddenly, in the middle of everything, Methica just runs away. And then she steals their car.
The car.
Oh, shit. And she's trying to take out.
That's
Tony's car. Oh, shit. She took out. Oh, shit.
She doesn't get very far, but then Methica abandons the car, and then gravity does its thing.
Oh, damn.
Now, there was no one in the car, so no one got hurt. But the cherry on top is when her neighbors just roast her.
Now your dumb ass finna go to jail.
Explain yourself.
I got to remember what I said in the IA investigation first. I'll be more than happy to tell you what happened. But, my partner and I, we got a call for this young lady here on the street. She was on the house, a stranger's porch, knocking on the door, and they just thought it was odd and never seen her before, so they called the police. And we were talking to her for a while on the sidewalk there. Never thought this was going to happen. Otherwise, I would have locked my car or walked to the scene, one or the other. But talking to her, she took a couple steps back every once in a while, and then she would come back to us. And we knew there was something more on board than just her trying to cause issues at the.
Does she live close by there?
I was going to ask.
She was actually from, I want to say, like the Bell Fountain neighbor area.
Mm-hmm.
So how she got here, she didn't know.
She took an ambulance. She drove a fire truck.
She stole a fire truck.
and then she drove an ambulance.
she was just in all the emergency cars that day.
Right, yeah.
I'm glad that ours was last. You saved the best for last, so she did take one of ours. You just talking to her, we never threatened her with jail, never even mentioned going to the hospital, never any kind of detention at the time. So we really don't know what initially sparked her to.
But when she ran, you were just going to let her run. That you were going to chase her down. Obviously, she needed help.
I mean, we knew. Like I said, my partner, he was a pretty healthy guy. He played semi-pro football for a while, so we knew that she could only get so far, and then we would be able to at least go down the street and get her. But we weren't going to try to chase her and add fuel to the fire because she wasn't in her right mind, and she was.
And you could tell that was clear.
Yeah. She wasn't on drugs.
There was something. Yeah, I don't think drugs at all. I think just.
Mental.
I think drugs led up to the mental part of it.
Okay.
But at that time, I don't, not being a complete drug expert, but they're good at missing.
But after this, you did some follow up with her.
We did.
And you found out that she did serve in what service?
Serve in the Army. She had 6 years under her belt.
Oh, wow.
And then she had gotten out how early?
Within the year. I can't quote the date, but within the year. Of the
and then you found that out, and she was honorably discharged? Mm-hmm. Or it a medical?
No issues. No issues that I can,
okay.
What we learned that day from her and her mom, it was clean cut and dry. She got out and came to this.
Deteriorated in her mind. And then, so she... But then you found out that she needed help. She was mentally.
On that scene. I mean, and it's funny to watch now that everything's closed and the statute of limitations of everything on my part is ran out. but it is sad to see with mental health anymore situations like this occur.
Yeah, especially
but you got one of our veterans. Get the charges dropped or
well,
reduced.
We still had to follow through with charges. We couldn't just completely let her go, but. I believe through Wesley Bell's office, there was a mental health diversion program that they put her on. And I think it took the course of being on house arrest, but she still had to do certain treatments. Because when we met back up with her, she was a completely different person.
Really?
So yeah, you met her. You've talked to her afterwards, huh?
Yeah, we did.
Did she remember doing this?
No. And I didn't try to press it too much. You know, I just.
When you talked to her the second time, did you lock your police car?
Yeah, I locked my police car. I took the keys and I actually threw
them in the field. Oh, nice. See, you live and learn. Right.
That's what I try to tell the chief of this is learning experience.
It's just a learning experience.
But I never say it will never happen again because I don't want to look like a liar when it does happen again. But we like to say we're going to try our hardest.
Now, did you get suspended? Did you lose days for this?
No. The chief was a rock star.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, they promoted me. This was the day before I became sergeant.
Hey,
not really.
I just threw away a
sounds
purse.
Like Danny's that's, nephew.
That's, yeah, man, we might be related.
I only threw away a purse, dude. I got a year's probation.
Yeah.
You got a year's probation for that?
Yeah.
I thought just like.
That's cruel.
6 months.
No, I'm telling you, they were mad.
In the city, if you lose your radio, it's 5 days, isn't it, John?
5 days, yes. I can verify that.
Yes, we know. And you didn't get anything for that. So
I should have gotten. I mean, but because the interesting part about that, this came right off the heels of a general order being put out by the chief, of you have to lock your car and make sure it's turned off. And to add the fuel to that fire is this already got nailed once, not exactly. Fine. I'm not bragging about it. So if the chief's listening to this, I'm definitely not bragging.
But you had reason though. Your computer would shut down, and you have to reboot it each time.
Well, this wasn't the car that I typically drove. So the computer was shutting down, and so if I didn't leave the car running, the computer would die. It would take about 5 minutes to boot back up. And
yeah, hey, you don't have to make excuses, us, bro.
Does it sound
you got your car stolen?
I mean, is it convincible? I mean, do you guys believe that story?
I mean, I believe you, but you got your car stolen.
Yeah. So the only other option was to have the magical unicorn in the back seat, continuously keep the computer running. But
okay, I got you.
One is the feeling. That after that, like you see the car, she runs up the street, she bangs into one tree. That car goes by you guys as you're trying to slide in, and it bangs into the other tree. And then you got her with you. You got this banged up car. I can only imagine the feeling at that point, right there. It's just like, where do I start?
I promise you that there's no way you can imagine that feeling.
You don't know who you're talking to.
Yeah.
That's true. You don't know who you're talking to.
That's true.
Let me ask you, how much fun did your other fellow officers get with this? Are they still having fun with this?
Even just as early as yesterday, the paramedics that responded to one of our calls was still
chirping about it.
Still real hot and fresh.
Or anybody new, they have to tell, this is the,
you're the guy.
So you say you're the guy. I'm a training officer for the department as well. So a few the past two guys right out of the academy, we tell the story and they stop and they look at me and they go, that was you? So they show this video in some of the academies as far as some of the mental health programs that they run through. So,
that's pretty cool. So 23 years in law enforcement. So we kind of do this from time to time. Can you tell us about any opportunity or something that you were able to do because and only because you were a police officer?
Yeah, I think one of the exciting parts was getting to go to the tour bus with Ted Nugent after the Jefferson County Fair.
You were on Ted Nugent's tour bus.
On Ted Nugent,
and he was on there too.
He was
Motor City Madman.
Super nice guy.
Sweaty Teddy.
Very law enforcement friendly. Wow. Sweaty Teddy
loves the police.
He loves the man. Yeah, he
and
does.
Guns. He loves guns.
We were working secondary at the fair, and we escorted him back to the bus. And his bus was actually in the Holiday Inn, the city of Festus.
Nice bus. That's
where he was staying at. It was a nice bus. Very nice bus.
Ted Nugent. I know that makes producer John happy.
At the concert, did you watch the concert?
Yeah, we got to see the concert.
Did he shoot his bow and arrow and shoot something out like he does sometimes?
I couldn't even remember. That was a long time ago. But
he's anti-drug.
Yes, he is. How
do you feel about that?
I don't agree with all that. I like his stance on many of things, but, you know. Hey. Every once in a while,
I think
drugs
he's talking
okay.
about hardcore drugs.
Like yeah, he's right. cocaine. Exactly. About
he's not a crusader or anything.
Right. Well, the other thing that I learned before the show is that you are related to somebody that is very close to our show and Randy Sassinger.
Oh, wow.
And how are you related to Randy?
He's my father-in-law.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
And how long have you been married to his daughter?
Since 2011.
Okay.
Good thing you knew that answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Well, we got married. Our wedding date was actually October 15th, and we picked that because back then the one in custody code was 10/15. So that way I'd never forget it. So I only had two. Now, it wasn't a completely cheesy cop story. We didn't pick that. We didn't pick that one
Can
day.
We cut
out
that
of the
story out.
Year. But we had two dates to pick from. That was one of them. I said, well, we just got to do this one. That way I'll never forget.
Yeah, well, heck
I like
yeah.
it.
Huh?
Yeah. Randy Sassinger is your father in law. That's cool.
Yes.
Kids?
Yes, we have kids. Five between the two of us.
Okay.
Hers, mine, and ours.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Five. That keeps you busy.
Like the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, just like the Brady Bunch. We have our little entourage everywhere we go.
That's cool.
B Bunch minus one.
Now,
what did Randy think about you getting your car stolen on duty?
He doesn't know yet.
Yeah, we didn't discuss it yet. There's some things we don't brag about at dinner. You know? And this is one of them. This is one of the things we don't brag about.
Tony, if it makes you feel better, when you know your major was working for me, he's always out making arrests. I mean, every night he made arrests, pretty much. And I was having dinner, and it was one of those nights we wanted to get off early. And I was going to have dinner and then go out and, you know, turn my car and my radio in and go out and have a few beers. And Trooper's partner, Tom Pavaza, calls and says, "Hey, Sarge, we got an arrest up here at Franklin and Grand. You might want to come up here." And I said, "What is it?" Because we got some drugs and that. So we take care of it, you know, like you always do. And he says, "No, you need to get up here." So I go flying up there, and we're at the Church's Chicken, and there's a, I pull up, and then there's the police car sitting there, and then there's a van, an old beat up van that was like half in and half out of the fence there, and it was pointing up toward the sky because there was a hill behind it. Well, the guy that they locked up, they stopped him on the lot. They got him with drugs. They got him in the car. Well, Trooper went to go back the car into a parking spot. They were going to leave it there, and the car just went right through the, you know, through the fence. So I asked Tom, I said, "Well, what happened?" He goes, "Well, Ron got in there, and, you know, he got in the car, and he rolled down the window. He lit up a cigarette. He had his arm sticking out the window. He puts it in reverse, looks behind him, and just drives through the fence." So the suspect in the back seat looks at Tom, goes, "Oh, it ain't got no brakes in it."
So the van was dangling on a thing, wasn't it?
It was
a cliff?
It was like the back wheels were on the hill and the front wheels were in the air, and it was just hanging there. So luckily, Troop didn't get hurt. And so then I just went up to the guy and said, "You let that officer get in your car and not tell him? First of all, how do you drive in St. Louis with no brakes?"
Slowly.
And
easy.
So anyway, we told him we're going to lock him up for assaulting a police officer,
endangering the life of a police officer.
So, but that's a Trooper story. At least he didn't wreck a police car, though. He just wrecked the suspect's car. So we never heard from.
That was almost a good story till that last part. But it is a good story.
Yeah. But the good news is you get our cursory field promotion, Tony, for coming on the show. So I'll call Ron after the show and let him know.
So you'll be a lieutenant?
Lieutenant Tony Moutre.
That sounds good.
And Trooper, when you're listening, it's true. He's a lieutenant now, and I want you to address him as such, please. Don't dishonor the show. He's a lieutenant.
Yeah, you're the one who screwed up and sent him here, so we promote everybody, so he's been promoted.
Thank you.
And Dan, what do we give him for being the
officer? Well, producer John's come up with. Beffa's is going to step in and sponsor, right?
Yeah, Beffa's restaurant, 2700 Olive at Beaumont, donated $25 gift certificate to give to the Officer of the Week. It's a great restaurant. I don't know if you've ever been there, Tony, but it's been there. They just had their 126th anniversary.
Jeez Louise.
It's a long time.
It's good food, and you can bring Trooper down there with you and celebrate the promotion, Lieutenant.
Fantastic. I'll save the gift certificate. He can buy that dinner and then.
Yeah,
I'm good. That'll work. Away from the kids for the night. Yeah,
that'll work.
You can use a gift certificate at the bar.
Yeah, and if he gives you any trouble, we'll get him on the show and we'll clean it up.
Thank you.
He'll be a captain if he keeps screwing around.
Yeah. All right, Tony, really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate the
opportunity. Thanks for coming in, Tony.
Yeah.
Awesome. Appreciate it.
Thanks for all the work. Keep up the good work.
Yeah. JJ, we have a good one on. Good one. It's going to be interesting.
I hope so.
We're going to learn a lot about methamphetamines today from retired Lieutenant Jason Grellner from Franklin County, retired.
It's good follow-up. Good follow-up from last week.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
Thanks for coming on, Jason.
Yep.
Glad to be here. It's a good time, and I really like what you guys are doing, so happy to be a part of it.
You're a regular listener?
I am. Listen to all the episodes and what you guys are doing about, you know, what the great things out there that law enforcement's doing every day, and then revitalizing and bringing things back to the city of St. Louis. You know, if the city goes, so goes the state. So got to have a strong St. Louis city and believe in that wholeheartedly.
Yep.
Doing what we do.
Doing our little part.
We're just trying, you know, making it. And that's what we want to do. And guys like you, you have an interesting story. And those are the kind of stories we want to get out there and memorialize. And one of the things that all of our listeners will remember is the meth craze. And Jason, before we get into that, when did you come on the police department? And did you go right to Franklin County?
No, I started in 91, came on. To the Union Police Department, small police department, Union, Missouri. Came on back in the day when you did not have to go to the academy before you started. You had 6 months before you had to go to the academy. So walked on, spent my first week in the office learning this, that, and the other thing. Next thing you know, I've got a Beretta and an 870, and I'm riding around in a squad car. I can remember the first night I go out on patrol, I'm in the squad car with a training officer, great guy, and we run into another Union car that's running lights and sirens. We spin around and get behind it, and the driver of the car, I kid you not, he's got his left arm out the driver's window. He's got a possum by the tail, and he's shaking it.
All right. Welcome to Union.
Yeah. We get down to the Highway 50 bridge over the Burbus River, and he spins it, throws it over the top of the squad car right into the river. And I said, what in the world was that? And he goes, well, we give traps out to the city residents to catch stray cats, and they catch everything under the sun, and we got to get rid of them. And I thought, this is not what I signed up for. So I spent 3 years at Union, great, great police department, great people. Chief Fowler was a great chief. Norman Bruni was a great teacher there. And then Franklin County started hiring. They had the grant from the COPS grant, mm-hmm. and moved over to the county, allowed me to move up in Franklin County, the St. Louis County line, made things easier on my wife, who was actually making the money at that time. Plus, it gave me second largest county in the state to patrol, patrolled for about a year, moved over to the Bureau, and then about 1996, started working narcotics and never left. Worked narcotics from 96 to 2018 when I left.
And wow. And again, narcotics entails a lot of stuff, but what Jason, he was on the front lines of the war on meth. And being from that rural area, that's where this thing took off. And when you came on, if I'm not mistaken, when we talked, meth was not even in our vocabulary, and then You took down your first meth lab. When did you take down your first meth lab?
It was December 12th, 1997. We did our first meth lab in a house in rural Robertsville, Franklin County, Missouri. Really didn't know what the hell we were doing. Didn't even know, to tell you the truth, what we were seeing. I had to call people like Joe and others from DEA. I had a background in chemistry, so went to college to be a chemical engineer. Broke my parents' heart, came out and went and became a cop. But I knew from the chemistry that was there and from what I knew that there was something not right, that these guys weren't smart enough to have this shit and didn't know what they were doing.
Was it a pretty decent looking operation?
No, like the first one? These things, look, these guys couldn't count their fingers twice and come up with the same number. Some of them would have struggled to count their balls twice and come up with the same number.
But when you see this layout, what's it look like, that layout?
There's glassware and shit that they shouldn't have. There's common chemicals that you would see, you know, at a grocery store or a Home Depot or something like that, but there's large quantities of it. And it's just, you know, batteries. That was the big thing back then. The only way you could get lithium metal was from lithium batteries. So you got all of these AA lithium batteries have been cut in half. And, you know, parts are missing from them. Parts are laying all over the place. And it stinks to high hell. Either smells like chlorine or anhydrous ammonia, which is just an obnoxious ammonia odor. Or, you know, some sort of a camp fuel or something like that. And there's buckets of crap everywhere because they don't know what to do with it.
Just talking about disposing the stuff. Right. That
Yeah. I mean, you're making pounds and pounds of crap on top of the small amount of methamphetamine that you're making. And, you know, they were smart enough to know then that if they started dumping that stuff, oh, my God, we're going to get caught. So, right there, to collect it in jugs and barrels and buckets and, you know, it's just laying around just stinking. And then, you know, I think I told you tonight, there's people who are pouring it in their kids' sandboxes out back because it would go away really fast, or they're pouring it in the pea gravel under their kids' swimming sweats.
In the woods,
you know, throwing it into lakes and ponds and rivers and streams. It was everywhere by the time we were done.
Well, I want to ask, we have a picture, I'm probably going to show up, but they're always, I've been in meth labs and they're nasty and they're just the scum of the earth to me, but they always, it's always amazing because there's so much chemistry. But didn't they had cooks that, like, these cooks were like very important to them. And I don't know where they getting these cooks from that knew how to do this.
Yeah. So the first ones came out of San Diego, quite frankly. You know, we could trace pretty much everything, even in Kansas City, back to San Diego. So a couple of guys came out of San Diego. Some of them were ex-military came back and they had the knowledge. They had the recipe. I always explained it like this. Making meth was a lot like making chocolate chip cookies, right? And the chocolate chip in the chocolate chip cookie was pseudoephedrine to methamphetamine, right? If you didn't have pseudoephedrine, you could make a hell of a cookie, but it wasn't going to be methamphetamine. So it was just a recipe. It was easy, replicatable, and all of the chemicals that you needed were easy to get a hold of. And you know how it is with crime, right? The bad guys always know 5 years before we figure it out what they're doing. You know, whether it's crack or heroin or fentanyl or carfentanil or any of the 2C combinations or methamphetamine. And so by the time I find my first lab, December 1997, they've probably been cooking for 2 years.
Okay.
You know?
So tell us the ingredients, just off.
Well, pseudoephedrine, I mean, like I said, it's like baking a chocolate chip cookie, right? You got to have the dough, you got to have the flour, the milk, grandma's secret ingredient, the sugar, the brown sugar, and the chocolate chips, right, and the butter. Here you have to have pseudoephedrine. And so that was the big thing to us, right? Pseudoephedrine is one oxygen atom different than methamphetamine. And pseudoephedrine hydrochloride, which is the water-soluble salt, is just like the water-soluble salt methamphetamine hydrochloride. The great thing about pseudoephedrine is it's not only one oxygen atom different, it makes D-methamphetamine. So there's two types of methamphetamine. There's D and L, dextro and levo methamphetamine. Levomethamphetamine, we can go out and buy right now. You buy a Vicks inhaler, right, this time of the year, and you're going to get levomethamphetamine. It's a bronchial dilator. It dries out your sinuses. It takes away redness and swelling and those sorts of things, but it doesn't get you high. It doesn't release dopamine in the brain, which is what dextromethamphetamine does. And so dextromethamphetamine, D-methamphetamine, releases more dopamine in your brain than any other chemical we know about on the planet. Cocaine, crack cocaine, you name it, any other stimulant you can name, nothing releases the amount of dopamine in your brain that methamphetamine does.
Wow. I went to a State Highway Patrol, and we had a course on it for a week, or maybe it was a long weekend, but we ended up
going. It was 2 weeks.
You drank like
it was 2 weeks, and you only paid attention for one.
It was one of the most boring classes, to be honest, I've ever taken. And
I probably taught there, but thank you.
No. But then it was... The interest, one of the things that it caught me, all the chemistry and the periodic table, that was just like lost. And so we had to take a test. It was tough. But the guy said he had a little cup of Kool-Aid, and he had a picture of Kool-Aid. And he said, he picked up the little cup, and he says, when you have an orgasm, and he dumped it into a bigger cup, that's the endorphins you get from,
right,
from an orgasm. And then he picked up the picture of filled up a whole pitcher of Kool-Aid. And he says, when you do methamphetamine, and he dumped it into the big pot, he goes, that's the endorphins you get for that. I'm like, holy crap. No wonder everybody's stuck on meth.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, it was 100. It's 100 times more.
We're gonna get people listening and be like, "I know how much drives meth."
I'm confused. Where we're going with this.
Say what?
You gotta give this a
clean your whole house in 5 minutes.
Click on the link below on the podcast for the recipe for grandma's meth recipe.
Yeah.
JJ had to throw the orgasm thing in there. Now everybody's going. Hey,
that's what the guy said. I mean, he's being honest. We're not PG.
Oh, it's 100% right. And the problem is, when you release that much dopamine in your brain, right? So you've got receptors and reuptake receptors, right? So if you release dopamine, you have to have a reuptake receptor that takes that in and that gives you that feeling, right? There's so much dopamine released that it breaks the reuptake receptors. So, you know, you hear about all the time chasing the high, right?
Yeah,
wanting to get back to the original high. You never can.
Because it's broke.
You broke it, right? So maybe you can pick up 95% on the second try that you did on the first try. But that's it. You broke your brain. And the problem is, you know, the tolerance level would go up rapidly. You know, where people would take a quarter gram of methamphetamine and maybe share it among four people, I had people that were taking an eight ball at a time, right? And they're taking an eighth of an ounce just to get high because when they started doing this is your brain on drugs and all that, and they started looking at methamphetamine people as opposed to crack and cocaine, they were like, holy crap, parts of your brain are missing. You're literally going to have to learn to rethink around the holes in your brain.
My experience, I feel like a recovered heroin addict can be completely normal.
Yeah.
But I think a meth recoverer is never the same.
No, they're just never right. They have muscle movement. Yeah. They have Parkinson-like effects.
It appears to affect their everything about their appearance much quicker than any other drug
because
does.
It kills the smallest nerve endings. And so the teeth would go quickly, right?
Yeah.
So we'd have a lot of teeth rot, a lot of open sores. Again, because of the dying of the smallest nerve endings, they would feel like like psoriasis. They were constantly scratching at themselves, picking at themselves.
Ugh.
Yeah, the open
like bugs.
Sores.
They said they had bugs.
You know, yeah. I was telling Jason when we were talking, I said I equivalated, and I did a lot of work with the majority of my career in narcotic,
right.
Chasing people for narcotics. I hated meth because it was so disgusting. It was equivalent to me as like when we were when I was in the third district as the street whores. They were just disgusting to deal with.
Yeah.
You just wanted to stay away from them. You didn't want nothing. They gave you the heebie-jeebies.
Oh, yeah.
And I can remember helping you a couple times. And when I say, I didn't help, Jason would get these investigations, and he did several of them. And we'd hit like 27 houses in Franklin County, Jefferson County. And each one would get, and I would go up there and get a house or two.
Time we get a team, and
these doors in Utah. I would get the heebie-jeebies before, and they didn't disappoint.
Withdrawal from when a meth addict reaches the high and then comes back down.
It'll kill you.
Makes them sick as hell, right?
Yeah, you know, we say, you know, heroin addict, right? When they get sick, right, getting on sick, they're sick. They feel horrible, skin's crawling. They've got like the flu and pneumonia and everything, and their bones are breaking and everything else. Heroin withdrawal will make you wish you were dead, but it won't kill you.
Right.
Same for cocaine, crack, everything else. Methamphetamine withdrawal will kill you, right? So the other thing about methamphetamine is it speeds up your heart. So sitting still on methamphetamine, your heart's beating about 220, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we want to get a good workout in. Well, not me exactly, but some people like to do this workout thing. By the way, if I'm ever found dead in a gym, it's a dumb job.
Yeah, somebody dropped you.
Yeah, I'm fucking track or a gym.
He's trying to get back in shape. Must have had a heart attack. Yeah.
There's a secondary death location somewhere, and it's not there. But
I got a question for you. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
When you first, you were the very beginning of this.
Yeah.
So when you just, like Tommy was saying, you did search warrants. You didn't take the precautions that you knew you had to eventually. So it got to the point where, man, we knew it was a meth lab, you had to have a team ready to go in there with hazmat suits.
Oh, yeah.
And it got to be such a pain.
I was technician level, and then I was site safety officer. So I had the highest level training they would give a law enforcement officer. I, you know, thank God I wasn't a firefighter. I wasn't born with that gene to sit on my ass and watch TV.
But ouch.
Oh, here we go. Zinger.
Brighter Side Blue loves firemen.
I tell you what, those canaries have saved me many times. So I do. My brother, actually my brother-in-law is a captain with St. Louis City Fire. So,
all right.
But I love giving them garbage. Good so, but yeah, you know, the, we didn't have anything. We went in. We didn't know what we were going into. We didn't. We had no training. We had no training in safety.
You had no knowledge of the drug at the time.
We had no knowledge of what the chemicals would do. Right. You know, you read them now, and you're like, you leave the back of a can of carburetor cleaner or brake cleaner. It's like, use in a well ventilated area. Do not inhale. You know, you know, all of those different things. Now you chlorine gas and anhydrous ammonia. Anhydrous ammonia has you can detect it at 3 parts per million. It has an action level at like 15 parts per million. It'll kill you at like 90 parts per million. I mean, it's just off the charts. And that's what got me. It was
that's what got JJ bored in that class.
Oh, oh man.
All
oh,
those parts, yeah, yeah. Parts all per those million. Parts
hey, the only
million.
Thing I remembered is the Kool-Aid thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're talking about an orgasm.
He won't drink, Kool-Aid to this day without, you know. Hello.
I'm glad we moved on past the orgasm talk.
I'm just saying. That's what I learned in my class, all right?
Yeah.
But
yeah. Yeah.
But there was a happy ending somewhere.
Yeah.
But in Missouri, we got recognized as like the meth capital of the world. And then you were in the heart of that whole battle.
I have the most meth labs that I either cleaned up personally or supervised the cleanup of in the United States. I had 1,261 labs under my belt by the time I quit doing labs or my team quit doing labs.
But we didn't produce the most.
No, that was California. California by far was producing the largest labs.
Because they had large like factories damn near.
Yeah, you know, they close to the border, like TJ,
right.
San Diego, San Ysidro. Chemicals could come across in bulk, could come across in liquid form. And then finalize stages here in the United States for a quick disbursement across the United States. That was going on up until, about 2008, 2009. And then, you know, I told you there's two types of meth, right? So the old way of manufacturing meth, we're talking about the 50s and the 60s, early 70s, was P2P, phenyl-2-propanone. And the problem with the phenyl-2-propanone method is, first off, most of the chemicals are outlawed, banned in the United States, but of course you can get them in third world countries. And the other problem is it makes D and L meth together, right? They're mixed together in the powder. You can't tell one from the other. And it's about 49% D, 51% L. So it's only 50% as potent as what we're making in the United States.
Yeah, they'll sort that out quick.
So that's what they did, right? So they're like, shit, all of these gringos are making a ton of money. And they're not buying our meth. So we're going to have to figure that out. So first thing they did was they got in bed with the Chinese and they started bringing pseudoephedrine in through Central America up into Mexico and they started making it. But quickly we got onto the Chinese government through the DEA and said, hey, you guys can't be shipping all that pseudoephedrine raw down to Central America. You know what's going on. So that kind of slows things up between Chinese organized crime and the Mexican drug cartel. So the cartels go back. And by this time, right, Project Colombia, Project Nicaragua in full swing. So the cocaine, the amount of cocaine coming out of those Central American countries is way down, but the chemists have nothing to do, right? The chemists who were purifying cocaine, crack, heroin, and all of that, they were like, well, what are we going to do today? Mm-hmm. We got nothing going on.
Yeah.
So they bring them up to Mexico. And they're like, look, we got this meth. It's D and it's L. We want only the D. So the first thing the chemists figure out for the cartels is let's separate it, right? Let's separate the D from the L. They figure that out. Using some acid, and they get it separated. So now they've got D, straight D meth they can sell in the United States. Perfect, great. Problem is it's only 50% of their product. So they go back to the chemist and they say, is there a way to flip the isomer? So if this is L methamphetamine and this is D methamphetamine, we just need to do that, right? We're going to flip the isomer from L to D. And the chemists go, yeah, let's think on it for a while. And come back and go, yeah, we got that shit figured out. So they go, yeah, we can flip your isomer. It's an added step. We're going to go from levo to dextro, and now you've got full dextro methamphetamine, 100%. Ship in the United States as fast as you can. Those guys love it. But by this time, you know, because you got to go back to 1997, doctors in this country are handing out opioids like Skittles, mm-hmm. right? And again, we're in law enforcement. We're behind the curve. And so we're just figuring out methamphetamine. And in 1997, between 1997 and 2006, the amount of opioids in this country that are being distributed goes up 600%. So does the death rate by overdose of opioids.
Right.
But we don't put it together by 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2006, again, shrewd businessmen that the Mexican drug cartels are, they go, yeah, we can slow up a little bit on this methamphetamine. It looks like they want opioids. We know how to get heroin. We know. We'll right. just plant hectare after hectare after hectare.
No, them cartels opium. Are pretty smart, dude. Right. We learned that last week. And they're stuff popping up, and they know exactly what the American people love, and they know how, and they're going to bring it in as much they can.
What cooking now, method did they use in Breaking Bad?
Breaking Bad was they used a lot of red peat, so he was a red phosphorus cook. So again, straight pseudoephedrine to methamphetamine. But there's two ways to strip off, if you will, that oxygen molecule. Red phosphorus was a little tougher method. You had to have a few more brain cells snapping. You did have to be able to count your fingers. And a lot of times we had a lot of explosions and fires. Don't get me wrong, we had them from both sides. But red phosphorus, if you overcook it, it'll turn to white or yellow phosphorus during the cooking process. And that shit will just explode if it's, you know, comes in contact with common everyday air.
Mm-hmm. So they were on a top. They were using top notch technology.
They had three ring, three neck flasks, and you know. But I can remember we hit one in Jefferson County, and this we hit the door, and this guy's on the couch with his old lady at the time, and they're going at it like two rabbits,
making meth or
making Kool-Aid.
Sex. No,
making Kool-Aid.
Well, they're making the Kool-Aid, but over on the Kool-Aid. Stove, over on the stove, they're making meth, and this thing's boiling over, and the white phosphorus. I'm just like. You know, we were seconds away from an explosion that was going to level the place. So we're grabbing naked jerks and out of the room.
You don't hear about all the blow-ups.
Getting them out.
Last week we learned about, we talked to Jack Riley and Joe Cronin. They were awesome.
Incredible.
What was the end of your career? When did you finally, I know they said earlier, when did you retire?
I retired in 18 completely. I probably stopped working dope in 16.
But what was the... Back in the heyday, it was just meth labs, meth lab.
Yeah.
And now we don't seem like we see them at all.
No. Kind of,
and so at the end, in 18, did you see many meth labs anymore? When did it just stop dying?
It just guys coming out of prison, and that's all they knew how to do. And so they, you know, you'd get a hot spot here or there of a guy coming out of prison and remembering how to do it. You know, we had put such tight restraints on pseudoephedrine. I won a national, actually, I won an international award for my work here in the state of Missouri. We had 76 communities that wouldn't sell pseudoephedrine without a prescription.
Yep. You're the guy. He's the guy to blame.
Anybody that needed three.
I got the sniffles.
I can't get my Sudafed.
Is it still the same way now that most of the meth is coming across our border?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. They figured out how to do it. They figured out how to do it in larger quantities and faster, right? Mm-hmm. And they've got the distribution network.
Right.
I told Tommy the other day, you know, the thing about meth was it was the first drug that was opposite of anything we'd seen in the United States, right? If you lived in a rural area and you needed dope, you had to go to an urban area, right? You went to downtown St. Louis, downtown Detroit, downtown New Orleans, downtown Chicago. You went somewhere in an urban area and you picked up your crack or your cocaine or
marijuana
or whatever it was, right?
Pot in a box over in East St. Louis.
There you go. But methamphetamine was the first drug that was completely opposite, right? I remember teaching St. Louis City at the academy. I taught methamphetamine lab class there, I don't know, three or four times, the old city academy. And I might get one or two guys that would find, you know, you teach a cop something, they're going to go do it, right? Teach them how to use a speed gun, they're going to go write speeding tickets. You teach them how to find a meth lab, and they're like, oh, that's that fat white guy told me about. Oh, yeah, that's methamphetamine.
That's smell.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd get a couple that would pop in the city, and I always came down and clean those up. I always came down to the city. Love working with the city guys. Come down. I remember we did one with a WashU student one time, big lab, and he was doing all sorts of crazy stuff because he had a chemistry background. But loved, you know, I would work 2, 3, 4 in a day.
Jeez,
and that's how I ended up getting hurt. We were about 27 hours in, third meth lab. We had to wait on a search warrant forever on our second lab. And so we were stuck, sleeping in our trucks, waiting for the search warrant to get there. We had the lab. We just couldn't do everything we wanted to do without the search warrant. So we get the search warrant, did that one, and a call comes in for a third one. And I'm like, guys, we got to, you know, suck it up. Let's go get in the trucks. Here we go. So we rolled and we got there and no warrant, just odor complaint from the neighbor. And as I'm walking up on the driveway, there's a truck box from the back of a pickup truck. And I can smell battery holes. There's a, when you break open a AA lithium battery, there's an acid smell. I can't describe it to you. There's an acid smell that comes from opening up a AA battery, and I could smell that. And there was a Coleman cooler 2-quart with a flip up.
Yep.
That's big sign.
And I thought, well, I'm going to open that up. Plain view. It's right here on the driveway in walking distance to the front door. I'm going to open that up. It's going to be full of battery holes. That'll give me the reason to write the search warrant. We'll be done with this quick. So I spin the top off, and I was wrong. The battery holes were in a bag next to it. Later, we would find out what was in the cooler was anhydrous ammonia.
Oh.
So anhydrous ammonia is a liquefied gas with a boiling point of negative 26 degrees Fahrenheit. So it boils at negative 26 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's boiling inside this thing. And so when I take the, you know, just like anything else, it steams, right? It's caustic. It's got a pH of 14. So I get a big whiff in my face. Anhydrous means without water or seeking water. My eyes, my nose, my sinuses, my mouth, everything's burning. I turn away and immediately my nose starts bleeding. And all my guys are laughing their ass off, right? Because I'm stumbling around. I can't drop the thing. And my nose is bleeding and I'm cussing. So I get the top screwed back on it, and I'm like, go get the warrant, you know, fuck it. And so I get over, and I get my nose to stop bleeding and warp my eyes out and worked. We worked all of that. So I guess it was about 10:30 that morning. So I've been up. I got to work at 7 the morning before. It's 10:30. I'm home now. Told my wife I'm going to bed. I'm done.
So wait, you never got the endorphin effect on
No. So I wake up, it's about 4:30 in the evening. She wakes me up and she goes, hey, I'm making dinner. You want some dinner? And I can't talk. And it feels like I've been chewing raw glass. And I'm like, well, that's not good. So I go in the bathroom and I find some chloroseptic and I give a couple of squirts and a secret. I said, I'm going back to sleep. I wake up the next morning and I'm just screwed up. And so go to the doctor, and he's like, yeah, you've got second and third degree burns to the top of your mouth, your sinuses, the back of your throat. I'm gargling with lidocaine for the next week. And things progressively get better, you know. Mm-hmm. Your body regenerates, and so, you know, new skin. And so about a week later, we get a call for another meth lab. Now I'm back to full duty and go to the lab, and I put my mask on, and I can't breathe. Physically breathe through my mask. And I'm like, so I change out the cartridges and I'm like, oh, that's not right. I could do that before. So workers comp says, hey, it's time for you to go see a pulmonologist. Go see a pulmonologist. They do pulmonary tests. And so, you know, probably not from exactly that one time, but from
over the years.
Over the years.
From 1,261 of them?
Yeah. Right. So 27% loss in my lung capacity. So I burned up about 27.
It burnt your lungs.
Yeah.
So the war on meth took a toll on you.
Yeah.
I know how passionate you were about that. I watched you in action. You testified in front of both state Congress and federal Congress with the Sudafed, correct?
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
And then one of the things you did that I'm not down with is that you argued against the legalization of cannabis. Did you know that, Danny?
I'm done with this interview.
Sure.
No, but Jason was very passionate about that, and it's kind of ironic that, you know, what he was very passionate about was the thing that ended up taking him out of law enforcement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just awesome. But
so you were forced to retire because of it?
I couldn't work labs anymore. So a lot of what I did, you know, I categorize evidence for the guys. You know, I felt bad that I couldn't. Before that, if there was a question, I was that guy, right? And I testified in federal courts all over the United States. I was the expert witness for the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Shmi, John. He was the Shmi subject matter
expert.
Yes.
Yes. And I did that for every incoming during that time, every incoming and sitting grand jury. So when the new grand jury got sat, I would come in and they would let me explain to them how to make meth. I'd teach them how to make meth. I'd bring in my bucket of meth materials, and I'd sit down and spend an hour or two with them so that when officers came in, whether it was somebody who was trained or was a road officer who just happened to find one, that they knew what they were looking at and what they were hearing from the officers.
Tell us a little bit about, as the labs, after a while, the Sudafed, you guys kind of slowed down the labs as it went on, but these guys got a little ingenious and they came up with what was called a one pot method.
Yeah.
Explain the one pot method and how these people would do it.
So, the basic way, that what we called the Nazi way, because it was developed by the Nazi Germans during World War II, the Nazi way of making methamphetamine was to use anhydrous ammonia.
That's, they steal that from farms, right?
Right.
Those big
they
tanks
did.
On farms.
Right. Yeah. I used to sit out on those tanks at night.
Yeah.
You don't get to do that in St. Louis City or St. Louis County, but in rural communities, you could go sit at tank farms and wait for idiots to show up.
Okay.
I remember this kid shows up. He's got a Coleman cooler. Right, just a 54-quart Coleman cooler, shows up to the tank, and you got to figure out which knobs and dials to spin right, and you got to cut the hose because it's got until you put it to the actuator in the ground, it's not going to dispense any liquid. So he cuts the hose, and he's monkeying around, and finally he starts filling, and all of a sudden you just see him go, thunk.
Just collapsed?
Yeah, it just collapses. So he suit up and run over and turn the valves off. And
we in a hurry?
Not a big hurry. So we get over there and we call the ambulance and we get him some oxygen. We get him cleaned up and he goes, just happens sometimes. I'll twist that valve and I'll just plumb pass out. Oh, when Jesus. I come to, the cooler's usually full. So close the top and climb in the car.
Now, when you sat on these tanks, was that secondary work or is that overtime?
No, that was the way to find a lab, right? Okay. You didn't have anhydrous, you didn't have a lab, right? So you could either do what St. Louis County did, great guys, some of the best people I know, St. Louis County Pill Diversion Task Force, work with St. Louis City, and they would watch the stores for us, right? And there was a regular route down Manchester through the city and back out. Page, I think, and they would watch all of the Walgreens.
What you're referring to is they would watch these people go in and buy two at a time.
Yeah.
At numerous different places. Yes.
Carloads of four and six.
Go yes. around and round. And
that was pretty common.
Yeah. Sergeant Tom Early from St. Louis County later came and worked at Franklin County with us. Great guy. Tom and his team won tons of awards throughout the nation for doing just that, watching people shop. Mm-hmm. They'd come out, they'd strip the box, throw the box and the receipt away immediately, and put the popper packs in there.
The Sudafed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to get back to my one pot method. I just want to know.
So the one pot method.
The theory is that you've driven past somebody making meth in Missouri.
In their car.
Shake and bake? They call them shake and
bake? Shake and bake, one pot, yeah, because what they were doing, though, is they were actually making anhydrous ammonia in the same pod that they had the pseudoephedrine and they had the lithium. And the problem with it is, to make anhydrous ammonia, you need water. And the real problem with that is lithium is a water-reactive metal. When you add water to lithium, it forms hydrogen gas, heat, and fire, right? So in a bottle, you're mixing...
Like a water bottle, correct?
Yeah, Gatorade bottles were the number one. Let me tell you, Mountain Dew is the choice of all methamphetamine dopers today. All right, they just do it.
Okay? I thought it was Kool-Aid.
No. That's just Kool-Aid is more your Twilight.
Okay.
All right. But Mountain Dew, and so you'd have a Mountain Dew bottle or a Gatorade bottle because the Gatorade bottles have a thicker wall on them.
Yeah.
And they put the chemicals in there. They put one packet of pills in there, shake it up, and set it. And every once in a while, you had to burp the bottle because there's pressure building up in there. But all it would take is for one piece of that lithium metal to get stuck somewhere and some water to come up against it. Next thing you know, now you got hydrogen being generated, which is highly flammable gas, right? And then if one of those pieces of lithium sparked in that bottle and there was the right mixture of hydrogen and oxygen, you just got a really big explosion.
Did any of them
you
blow
made a
up?
Bomb?
Any of them blow up as they were doing it?
Oh hell yeah, all the time.
Really?
Yeah. Or they burn. They'd catch fire and just. So we were doing it. We were emulating them for some videos that we were doing, and we burned two tables down trying to do it. We couldn't do it without causing a fire. you know, the other one was back to anhydrous ammonia was, you know, they would put it in pressure tanks, they put it in coolers, they'd put it in jars, buckets, you name it. And I can't tell you the number of times that they would put it into a pressurized container, like a fire extinguisher, a CO2 container, an oxygen tank that wasn't made to hold it. This thing grows, used to know this, right? I think above 70 degrees, every degree above 70 degrees Fahrenheit, it increases the pressure by 100 PSI, right? So you can quickly expand the pressure inside the tank just by heating it up. So we get a call one day to a fire at a guy's house. His car's on fire in his driveway. We get there, his car's not on fire. The anhydrous tank in the back of his blazer, the valve is gone. It's just putting out white smoke everywhere. So they said, well, somebody's going to have to suit up and get in there. And I said, well, might as well be me. What the hell? So I put on my Dumbo suit, put on my oxygen tank and my mask, and I'm getting all taped up. It's July. It's like, I swear to God, it's like 102 that day.
Yeah.
And right here where the zipper stops and the mask comes in, the hood comes in, there's a spot. And if you don't cover it with tape a couple of times, because you're an old fat guy, and it moves around, it'll open up. So there's a local fire department there, great guys, even if they are hose draggers, basement savers. And I said, I said, listen, you got nothing to worry about. I said, unless I start running. I said, if I start running, your job is to try and keep up. And I was just tongue in cheek like I am. So I climb in the back. And so they had like six tanks that they'd filled with anhydrous ammonia. And one of them was already leaking. And I could see that. So I started busting the windows out from the inside. And just as I moved a CO2 tank, the nozzle shot off and went through the dashboard. So I'm holding it between my legs. I'm in the back of this blazer. And I'm holding on to it. And it's pushing at me, right? Because it's like a rocket now. The whole car goes white. I can't see any. I can't see my hand in front of my face. Everything's white. And all of a sudden, I feel a burning sensation. Anhydrous ammonia without water. So it's seeking water. So it's seeking the sweat that's running down my neck. And as it connects with that sweat, it's starting to go south. Ooh. Towards Uh-oh. My Kool-Aid region. Right? So,
Ruh-roh.
Yeah. I can't let go of the tank because it's going to come shooting between my legs. But I've also got hot lava running in that same direction.
Right.
So finally, the pressure lets up enough. I can twist the tank. It goes shooting out the side of the blazer. I jump out, and now I'm just running.
Did the bee dance? Yeah. Like bees were chasing you?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, like a little kid that fell off his bike. I'm just running because I'm running. And meanwhile, the firefighters are spraying water on me, and I outrun them. The next thing you know, I've got six firefighters chasing me, and they've let go of their hoses. And they're just out in the front lawn doing this. And the firefighters are chasing me, and I stop, and I turn around, and I rip my mask off, and I'm ripping the suit off. And I said, what are you guys doing? And he said, hey, you said if you start keep running, up. Just keep up, brother. We're just trying to keep up.
They thought something was about to blow. Something about to blow. We've seen this before.
Wow.
Any scars on the lower region?
No. Everything's still there and as small as it used to be.
27%. Oh, my God.
I mean, in the meth now, I mean, you don't hear about nothing, but that's because
there's no pure meth. I think they
mentioned it. Well, the Mexicans took it over and they ran everybody out of business.
Yeah.
And they just run it across the border when they need it.
Well,
they find
what's the most popular right now out there?
The fentanyl craze is killing more people than anything we've ever seen before. And it's not just fentanyl. You know, we use fentanyl, and it's really a bunch of fentanyl drugs, right? There's fentanyl, there's carfentanyl, there's acetafentanyl, there's a bunch of different fentanyl derivatives out there, right? And the problem with fentanyl is pure fentanyl, what we see doctors using and what physicians understand is only about 50 times more potent in morphine equivalent. So everything in the opioid world is measured against morphine as an opioid. So morphine's the baseline and you're either stronger or you're weaker than morphine, right? So whether you're oxy or hydro or whatever you are, you're measured against morphine. Well, fentanyl is about 50 times stronger in morphine equivalents. which is why we can take it dermally. You know, we'll see morphine or we'll see fentanyl patches put on people, slow release dermally through the skin. You'll see them a lot of times, people with chronic pain issues and stuff like that. Even fentanyl lollipops for people with high pain tolerance. Well, then we started seeing acrofentanyl, acetofentanyl, 4-acetofentanyl, 5-acetofentanyl. Like, where's all of this shit coming from? And then we saw the big daddy, carfentanyl. 1,000 times stronger in morphine equivalents.
That's what's dropping people?
Oh, yeah. You. I mean, literally something the size of a grain of salt drop an elephant, right? Carfentanyl is...
Elephant.
Yeah, and you know, again, you got people.
You're not pulling a Tommy Sawyer on us right now, are you? Because Tommy Sawyer just bloviates shit like that, and then we just continue to nod our heads. Now you're saying
that even took me by. That even took an elephant, huh?
Nobody was going to challenge it, but I'm going to challenge it. The size of a piece of salt can drop an elephant. Who tested that?
Well, they used to.
Was there an elephant out there that they actually put it out there? Take this, and
they actually
elephant
used
dropped?
To use Good it point. On elephants to anesthetize them when they want to do medical projects.
Until they put that one drop in that one elephant,
and they were killing too
Gone.
Many elephants.
We need to stop this.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It has no human known usefulness at all.
There's no
dosage small.
And where are you seeing it at? Where's it coming?
It's coming out of China. Look, you know, I testified before Congress a year ago, April, and we were talking about money laundering and how easy it is now because the U.S. dollar turns into yen and then yen is transferred back into pesos, that there's no need anymore for that money to transfer across the border going south, right? It used to be the peso transfer, and we were trying, you know, under Catherine Tandy, when she was director of the DEA, we had a huge push to stop a couple $1 billion a year from going south across the border. You know, again, teach a cop to do something, he's going to do it. We did a great job on that. You don't have to do that anymore, right? There's enough Chinese nationals living in the United States who are willing to transfer the dollar into yen that what used to be 40 cents on the dollar is now 80 cents on the dollar.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, I was asked, well, you know, why are the Chinese doing this? I said, are you kidding me? We're losing 300,000 people a year. 300,000 people a year are dying. And they're all between the ages of 17 and 34, the exact age of fighting men and women in the United States. Why do you think they're doing it?
Yeah.
That's interesting. But we got into that last week, too, with Joe and Jack. And this ties back to it. And, you know, you went from the meth labs, the one-shot lab, to nothing because the cartel said, we got you.
Yeah.
And they've been now people. Now these meth cooks are unemployed. What the fuck are we going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they've been operating that way since the 1800s, right? The cartels were UPS and FedEx for everything bad coming out of Central America into the United States.
That's unbelievable. That is, well, I guess that's a good way to end. We ended the show last week with... I think Riley was telling the Americans how porous the border was.
Oh, God. Yeah, when Jack was down at El Paso, holy cow.
Yeah.
I remember when he left St. Louis, went to headquarters, and then down to El Paso. He said, hey, any of your guys want to come down to El Paso, see what the world's really like? Let me know. So I called him up. I said, hey, I'd like to send five of my guys down, spend a week down there with you, seeing what the border's like. He goes, do not send them here. This place is effed up.
Well, I mean, you're a hero.
No.
Think about it.
Not even close.
Chasing this, and it look what it did to your lungs, you know. And, I learned having you was like having a science class on today. Anhydrous, what's it chasing, JJ?
Water.
Nice.
There you go.
Nice.
We're on a roll, though. That's the now we're two shows in a row. We've had people that testified in front of Congress.
Yeah,
and they didn't listen.
I think I would do good in front of Congress. What do you think?
I know. I think you would.
I think I'd do pretty good in front.
Oh,
of
yeah.
So
you up.
I don't know.
It'd be entertaining. That's for sure.
Who's our third going to be? Stormy Daniels.
Drinking Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Best time we'll do is to testify in front of the Congress Hotel.
I think just go in there with a head, you know, a little head bob. What's up?
Oh my God. No mobile nod.
Yeah, give them the mobile nod. What's up? And then let them fire away.
Tell you. Those mobile guys are great. We worked a crack cocaine case. We were working out.
You don't have to do this.
We were working three blocks behind St. Louis County.
You
got to
give JJ his
off of Bay.
Kool-Aid.
That sucked up to JJ.
I tell you what, an area where they were doing a bunch of revitalization work there off Skinker, and we were calling out cars. I was sitting in the van, sweating to death, calling out cars. Now, I'm colorblind, by the way. And on top of that,
was that from the meth?
No, it's just from being ignorant. Okay. And I'm calling out cars and mobiles, picking them off left and right, just nailing them. And mobile guys came down and testified in federal court. We did 28 people in that roundup, and the top guy got 4 life sentences plus 40 years.
300,000 people a year.
Tom used mobile a lot too.
37.
We're everybody's used. Everybody uses.
Hey, that's because we knew you were so damn good.
Oh, they were good. Now they were good. I ain't gonna lie about that. Yeah. I was just laughing at the fact that Danny was talking to me and JJ just did JJ's thing.
He just over there muttering.
That's funny.
I think we'll end it that's with 300,000 people.
All right, that's a good ending. Thank you so much, Jason, for coming on.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, buddy.
We appreciate all you did against that war on meth because that was some funny stuff. All right, thank you.